Please welcome Gene Melter.
Thank you, Kirk. Good evening. When I was a young woman, this is way back in the previous century, I had my first real job, and by real job I mean full-time, potentially permanent, room for advancement, benefits, salary you could live on, you know, you had to dress up, real job. And I didn't realize at the time that it was the best job I would ever have, and I'm not saying I've had a lot of jobs, that would be a lie. But it was much better than the next job I had. So this job was an office job, just straight ahead, meaningless work that anybody like a robot now does, I'm sure. In downtown San Francisco at a university called Golden Gate. This was for professionals, busy professionals, to get their business or law degrees. And I worked in the registration department. And the reason it was such a great job, especially compared to my next job, which is middle school teacher, was because it was meaningless and stressless, and I worked with super fun people. And I realized that that's what makes a job, is your coworkers. And so no one knew the term sexual harassment or any of those unfun terms, and the work environment was completely inappropriate, but in a good way. So it was mostly gay people, and this is my first exposure to gay people, who are super fun, and almost everybody in the whole downstairs registration administration or admissions department was a performer. How fun is that? And I was kind of into theater, and so we just spent all our time, when there were no customers, singing and talking about performing, going to each other's shows at night, and there were, parties and lots of romances or things that were shorter than romances, going on. And, management and staff, there's just no boundaries whatsoever. Super fun. And so I heard a lot about my gay friends' love lives, and they, it was exciting. I mean, they were pretty busy. This is pre-AIDS, very sad, but pre-AIDS was really different than post. And there was just like this wonderful nightlife and exuberance and joy and music and so when I'd hear about all this, and they kind of, especially the gay men, felt pretty sorry for me and the other straight people, because we, read a lot, and, it seemed to be the case that we didn't get laid very often, and they were always trying to fix this for us. And my position was pretty public, because we sat along, in the registration department, we sat along a long counter, so there was a big lobby, glass doors, you come in from it was like Market Street, and then there's all of us sitting there with our nameplates, and this is a great flirting situation if one knew how to flirt. And the guy who sat next to me, my dear friend Marcel, gay man in his 30s, super handsome Latino man with a mustache and green eyes, and everybody, men and women were, of course, interested in Marcel. And he was a great flirt, and he had a very, very busy and interesting social life. He was always trying to help me out. One day I come back from lunch, and Marcel has done some flirting on my behalf. And he's always checking people out as they come through the door. And so a guy came up to him to register for classes or drop a class or add a class or whatever. And the guy had seen me, but I wasn't there. And Marcel set up a date for me. Lunch the next day. So I return from lunch, and Marcel tells me I'm going on a blind date the next day. And it wasn't very busy, and so we kind of had the place to ourselves. So I just pump him all afternoon, because I don't take risks like this. I don't like any sort of surprises, even good ones. I just like, you know, control, predictability. And now I've been set up on a blind date. So I say things like, "Okay, Marcel, are you saying that if this man were, we'll call him John, if John were gay, you would date him?" Marcel said, "Yeah, yeah." And I think, well, Marcel has very high standards. This is good. So Marcel, do you have the sense that this guy, you know, is interesting? I don't know. Do you think he has a sense of humor? Marcel hadn't actually talked to him that long before setting up this date. And Marcel's kind of puzzled, like, why is it such a big deal? Marcel has been on, you know, hundreds of dates. I'm putting a lot of pressure on this one, like, hour lunch date, and just thinking about this guy and what he might be like, what are we going to talk about, and how are we going to get through the hour? And then word spreads throughout the whole floor, you know, well, the Jean's got this date that Marcel set up the next. So then the next morning, I'm all nervous going to work, and I put on a cute outfit and make myself cute. And then all morning, waiting for the lunch time to arrive, you know, I'm all nervous and everybody's teasing me. Oh, Jean's got a date. And everybody's going to come out from their little warrens, the people who work in the warrens, to check this guy out and everything. So noontime comes, the glass doors open, and in walks a guy who's a cross between, I'm just going to say chubby Hitler. Okay, so which one is the chubby one? Is Stan Laurel or Oliver Hardy? Which one's the chubby one? Oliver Hardy. Okay, if Oliver Hardy were playing Hitler, okay? Like in a sketch or something. Okay, and Marcel's going, that's him. As he's coming down across the lobby, and I'm kind of horrified. It's not. So he's got the short, dark hair, shaved up the sides, you know, kind of slicked down, the little mustache, and he's wearing a suit, and then his neck is kind of bulging over it, and he's just kind of got a funny, like this is not a cool person in any sense. He's kind of ageless, but he's kind of old man-ish, you know, and I was like, oh my God. And he comes up to the counter, Marcel introduces us, and I know I don't like him. And he starts talking, I don't like him, but now I'm stuck. I have an hour-long date, and I know everyone's enjoying this. And I get my purse and leave, I give Marcel a look that says, at 1 o'clock, I'm going to kill you. And then we leave, and John asks me where I want to go for lunch, and I try to think of the least romantic possibility, and I come up with something. So we go to this salad bar place that's super noisy and kind of industrial, and you're standing in line so I can easily pay for myself. There's no servers or anything. And so we get our, it's like where you weigh your salad, you know. So we get our salads and sit down. I'm looking at my watch. I've got like 43 minutes left on this date. And he starts talking about himself, of course. And it turns out that he's, I don't remember what he did for a living or what degree he was trying to get, but he was way into the Army Reserves. And he was just talking about it and talking about it and talking about it and all the weapons he got to learn to shoot and all this and all his friends he'd made. And he really looked forward to this one weekend a month where he got to go kind of play with his friends. And then it's like 2 weeks a year or something. He's talking about this. And then other things come up and I realize he's a fairly conservative person and I could not have been more liberal. I mean, just like way off the spectrum. I marched in gay marches and everything, even though I wasn't gay. It's just like every liberal thing. And so I'm just watching eye on the watch, just got to get through this. And then before I needed to, I'd say, gosh, I got to get back to work. They're really sticklers. I'll get in a lot of trouble. Not true. It was the loosest possible, you know, work environment. But I'm raced down the sidewalk with him kind of trotting behind the side, and I'm trying not to really converse or anything. I get back to work. And then at the front doors, I said the coldest possible goodbye that wouldn't be considered just rude and cruel, you know? So just like, well, thanks, I got to get back to work, see you later. You know, whatever I said was like, I was just trying to just like send a signal without saying the actual words, that's it. And so then I go back to work, and then I lay into Marcel, of course, and then everybody's laughing, and I'm just going, you would not, I know what your type, Marcel, you would not have slept with that guy, you lied about that. And Marcel's going, well, I don't know what your type is, backpedaling. You know, yeah, of course I wouldn't sleep with him, but, you know, I don't know, maybe you, what, you know, this kind of thing. So we go all afternoon and all that. But then I go home and I just think, okay, it's so stupid to go on a blind date and or to get somewhat worked up about things and just put it behind you. It's behind you. A couple days later, I'm just minding my own business. Glass doors swing open. In comes John, and he's carrying a big bouquet of red roses. And he comes marching over to the counter, and I'm just horrified, just horrified. And he marches right up to me, and I know what I should have done, but I was just so unpleasantly surprised. I had no presence of mind at all. What I should have done is intercept him, like go right around that counter and just intercept him in the lobby, steer him out the door, and say what I had to say. But I just sat there and let him come. He comes up to the counter. Now we're all lined up, and then there are a couple of students. And I didn't even let him open his mouth. And I just blurted out, look, John, we have nothing in common. I just don't think we should see each other again. And he had this funny little smile on his face, and his face just sort of crumpled. And then he had this frowny face, and then he got this kind of angry face. And he took those roses, and he slammed them down on the counter. So they're little blossoms. That's what kind of, And he stormed out, just stormed across the lobby, and everyone was silent. And then Marcel said, he had to take it, but he didn't have to take it well. Thank you.